Okay, let's proceed to first century Jerusalem, where we kind of left off. And that is that Herod the Great had this great construction project going, and he rebuilt Jerusalem. His goal was to rival Rome. He wanted to build a city that rivaled Rome. And he wanted to please the Jews. Now, Herod was not a Jew. Everybody knows that, right? He was an Edomite. Ironically enough. He was basically the governor appointed by the Roman Curiate to be the governor, and he's sometimes called the king of Judea, called himself the king of Judea. And they were a pretty rotten mess of rascals, frankly. They were known for killing their own family members, assassinations within the family. They were known as thieves. They were a pretty rough group of rulers, but Rome liked them because they gave a lot of tribute to Rome. And one of Herod's great projects was to try to rebuild Rome in Judea to try to impress the Romans. So Jerusalem's project was to impress the Romans. Here you see an overview of what we call the Old City. And if you go to Jerusalem today, you'll see the old ancient walls, which were basically built by one of the Christian Crusades. So what you see today in the old city was not the original Jerusalem where first century Christ was. The old city today is divided into four quarters, but this is what it looked like in first century, having been rebuilt by Herod the Great. You see the Pool of Bethesda. Fort Antonia was the big fort that was built just to the north of the temple. And this is where the centurions of the Romans were garrisoned in case there was a revolt. Most of the revolts started in the temple, so it was right next to the temple. That's why they built it there. You see the temple, see the Western Wall, the Dome of the Rock today. That's just giving you some orientation. There's the Golden Gate to the east. We talked about that earlier, right? There's the Damascus Gate on the road to Damascus through the north, and right outside of it is the Garden Tomb in Gethsemane. And this is the wall that Herod Agrippa built around the city. Herod's palace, near the old citadel of David. Anyway, it gives you kind of an orientation of where everything is within the city of the first century. So this is the city where Christ was. Matthew 2 and Matthew 27 tell us that Herod and Pilate both had houses in this area inside the city. Pilate also had a house in Caesarea. Caesarea was actually the seat of the government, but they all had houses here, palaces, if you will. This is a picture of Herod's temple. Again, very familiar. It was built on the same pattern, primarily of Ezra and Nehemiah's temple. Again, it was facing the east, looking towards the east gate. And this would have been the temple that Christ and the apostles would have looked at. Christ often went to the top of the Mount of Olives, and when he looked down, he'd be looking at this eastern view of the temple. And it was done in white marble over limestone, so it was very brilliant and bright in the Middle Eastern sunshine. So it was a beautiful place to live in Jerusalem. Some other pictures of the expansion. This is to the south and the west, if you've ever been to the Temple Mount. This is called Robinson's Arch. Anybody know why it was called Robinson's Arch? Robinson built it would have been a good guess, but actually Robinson was an English archaeologist who discovered the remains of the Ark covered underground. And this has all been taken away, torn away. It was crumbled down and destroyed by Tiberius in 70 AD. But this would have been the entrance, as I said, from the south and the west. So Christ and the disciples came up. It came up into what is called the Court of the Gentiles, which would have been the court that surrounds the temple. So you could have gone up on the platform and stayed in the Court of the Gentiles, but non Jews could not go inside the temple or inside the inner court of the temple. They had to stay in the court of the Gentiles. And this is why Timothy, remember Timothy was circumcised? Because the law said that only circumcised Jews could go in the temple. So when Paul went up there with Timothy, Timothy had been circumcised. Because remember, Timothy's father was a Greek, his mother was a Jew. And if your mother was Jewish, you were considered Jewish. But he had to be circumcised. And so there was this uproar when they said, they accused Paul, remember, bringing somebody into the temple who was uncircumcised. It turned out that was Timothy, but he in fact had been circumcised. Okay. Let's go back to the Temple Mount. So you see here, this is that platform again on which the temple was built. You see the expansion that Herod made. He went to the north and he expanded the walls. And again, he filled it in with earth. What is really interesting is you go there today, you can get what they call a temple tunnel tour. And if you ever go, you should take this tour. Because what it will do, there's a labyrinth of tunnels underneath the temple platform. And the tunnel tour will take you through tunnels that have been cleared by the Jews, and it's run by the Jews. And you can actually go in some of these tunnels underneath. It's really kind of neat at night because they light it up at night inside, and it has kind of a cave-like feeling, and it just it tells you some of the activities that took place underneath, like in the basement of the temple. This is where the priests prepared the olive oil for the instruments upstairs. It's where they gathered in chambers to sing, and where they had their rehearsals. It's where they kept a lot of their precious things. Their garments were all held under here in some of these, this labyrinth, this honeycomb of tunnels. Occasionally you will hear of somebody going into these tunnels and creating a stir, because today the Temple Mount, what is on top, is controlled by the Arabs. The Palestinians control the top of the Temple Mount today because the Dome of the Rock is there in the Al-Aqsa Mosque. But underneath, the Jews claim it, that's their territory. And they are walking through all these tunnels, this honeycomb underneath the platform all the time. And occasionally one of them will be discovered, and it creates an international scene. Anyway, that's where it comes from. Is they're down there looking in those tunnels. And, you know, I talked to somebody earlier about speculation. It is speculated that the Ark of the Covenant is hidden in one of these catacombs beneath the temple platform. Now, that's just one speculation. There are other speculations, too. But we'll maybe talk about that when we talk about the evening and the morning sacrifices. Okay, so he expanded the walls. This, again, is another picture of what is called Herod's Temple. And this is a view we put together of pictures looking from the Mount of Olives across to the temple platform. This is a model. I forget what the scale is, but it's been built. This is to replicate what the first century Jerusalem looked like. So if you go to the Jerusalem Archaeological Museum, which I'd highly recommend if you go there, right outside the museum they have this model. You can actually walk around it. You can see all the buildings. You can see Herod's temple. You can see Herod's palace. You can see the Fort of Antonia. It's all here. And, of course, on the right there, you see the temple platform. I want to point out a couple things while we're here. Right here. Here is the temple platform. If we go to Luke chapter 4 and verse 9, this is what is commonly called the temptation of Christ. It says, then he brought him to Jerusalem, that is, the devil brought Christ to Jerusalem, set him on the pinnacle of the temple. Now, the pinnacle of the temple is considered to be this south eastern corner. You see where you get the sunshine and the shade right there on that corner. It is estimated that from the top of that platform that Herod built to the bottom, which is the valley of Jezreel, it's 167 feet. So you're looking at like a 17-story building. And that was considered to be the steepest, precipitous, most precipitous part of the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. So it's speculated that when Satan brought him to Jerusalem, he brought him to this vista. So that he stood right there on the corner, as it says, the pinnacle of the temple, and said to him, "If you are the Son of God, throw yourself down from here." So you can see he would have thrown himself down. Now, what is really interesting is this valley later became the Valley of Hinnom, or Gehenna. And this is where the citizens of Jerusalem and other places threw their garbage. And it was burned down in this valley of Jezreel that was later called the Valley of Hinnom. So he was asking Christ to throw himself into hell. Gehenna in the New Testament, basically. "For it is written," verse 10, "He shall give his angels charge over you to keep you, and in their hands they shall bear you up, lest you dash your foot against a stone." And Jesus answered and said to him, "It has been said, you shall not tempt the Lord your God." And of course, this was the conclusion of the temptation of Christ and qualified him then to be the ruler to replace Satan, ruler of the earth. A couple of other shots here. This is the pinnacle, the little purple triangle you see that I described. And this is the city of David, that old city that we talked about before, which is just down the slope from Temple Mount. And this would have been Golgotha, up there in the highest part, which is technically outside of the old gates, the old city that we saw floor plan of a little while ago. Another artist's conception of what it looked like. Old city of David, Temple Mount, Gethsemane. Garden of Gethsemane and Golgotha would have been up there. And remember, the hill is going up, and when it was even flattened out, it would have ended up there. And that's what, again, Abraham would have seen had he come from the southern part of the valley. And this is the palace of Herod. And you see the other things that were typical of a Roman city. You got the big amphitheater and a lot of very expensive homes that would have been in the city. You get kind of an inkling of that if you go to Ephesus today and you go into the tour called the condominium tour. Is it condominium? What is that? Where you go in apartment tours? Yeah, it's apartments. They have unearthed a lot of these in the ancient city of Ephesus, and you can actually see the mosaics. You can see the painting on the wall. They've taken the dirt off all the stuff, and it's just absolutely beautiful. These condominiums are apartments that are first century-like that were rebuilt in the Roman style. So this city would have been built much like that, but it's all been destroyed, as we shall discover here in just a few moments. Okay, so let's go back to the schematic we looked at earlier. So what you have here is the city of David, Temple Mount, Golgotha. Now, this is rather interesting. Let's go to Matthew 24. Matthew 24, verse 1. It says, "Then Jesus went out and departed from the temple." Matthew 24, 1. "And his disciples came up to show him the buildings of the temple." Remember, this is a fantastic new city. Beautiful place to look at, especially for somebody from Galilee. "And Jesus said to them, 'Do you not see all these things? Assuredly, I say to you, not one stone shall be left here upon another that shall not be thrown down.'" This is showing that area on the southwest corner where Robinson's Arch was. Long since gone. These stones on the right that you see are part of the platform of the temple. That's what this is, the platform of the temple. Those, they speculate, are not Solomon's stones. Solomon's stones would be even below this. So these were Herod's stones. When Herod rebuilt the walls, this is what we're looking at in the wall that's there that goes up to a certain level. And then it was rebuilt later by the Ottomans and other people. But you see this pile? The pile was left there when they excavated all this, and they've actually gone down to the Roman level. You see this street in front of you here? This is a Roman street. So this is probably the street that Christ and the apostles walked on this Roman street that you see besides the guardrail. But just beyond, you'll see the heap of rocks, and they left it there. Christians bought this whole area and they turned it into a park, and they left it there in commemoration of Christ's prophecy. And he said, one stone will not be left on another. So these stones were knocked down as a result of the Roman conquest. And they left that heap there, that pile, just to kind of illustrate the point. Okay, let's... I'm getting a little ahead of myself. Let's go to Acts chapter 2. Oh, I'm sorry, this is the Garden of Gethsemane. I'm jumping far ahead of myself. Now, this is across the Jezreel Valley that from the east side. And this is the Garden of Gethsemane. These olive trees are said to be 2,000 years old. Of course, all of us around here are familiar with olive trees, but who knows exactly? Golgotha again, the garden tomb. Okay, let's go to Acts 2. We'll probably be reading this again on Pentecost. In verse 1, Acts 2, 1, it says, when the day of Pentecost had finally come, they were all with one accord in one place. And then it describes the arrival of the Holy Spirit that occurred. It tells us there were 120 in that original room in Jerusalem when the Holy Spirit arrived on the church. But the church grew pretty rapidly. Then we read about Peter's sermon. This is an artist's conception of Peter's sermon that follows in Acts chapter 2. And, of course, this created quite a stir. It says that 3,000 people were baptized as a result of seeing this dramatic miracle. Let's go to chapter 5 and verse 28. Peter and John are brought before the high priest, it says in verse 27. Acts 5, 27, now verse 28. Did we not strictly command you, the priest said to them, not to teach in this name, talking about Christ. And look, you have filled Jerusalem with your doctrine and intend to bring this man's blood on us. Remember Stephen's famous sermon, which is going to take place in just a moment, where he said that the blood is on you. You know, you in Jerusalem here, you killed him. So a number of very exciting events occur in Jerusalem while the apostles are there. We next go to Acts chapter 6. We read the record of Stephen in this very powerful sermon by this deacon. And as a result, he is stoned. And remember, in order to be cursed or stoned, you had to go outside the city walls. And that was outside these city walls that you saw described earlier. So they take Stephen outside and stone him. Stephen becomes the first martyr in the church. This occurs in Jerusalem. Then a number of other things happen. Paul is in Jerusalem frequently. Let's go to Acts chapter 15. In Acts 15, we find that there's a conference held in Jerusalem to talk about proselytes and particularly Gentile proselytes. In verse 2, Acts 15, verse 2, therefore, when Paul and Barnabas had no small dissension and dispute with They were called Judaizers. These were Christians who said that in order to be converted, you have to go through the proselyting of the Jews in order to do that, which meant circumcision and ritual baths, etc., etc. In verse 4, it says, "And when they had come to Jerusalem, they were received by the church and the apostles and the elders, and they reported all things that God had done with them." This is Paul and Barnabas. "But some of the sect of the Pharisees who believed rose up believing, said it's necessary to be circumcised and to command them to keep the law of Moses. And now the apostles and elders came together to consider this matter." So they had this conference in Jerusalem that decided a very important matter about the gospel going to Gentiles. This occurred again in Jerusalem. We don't know exactly where. It's not stated, but it happened there. The next time we read about Jerusalem occurs in chapter 20. Chapter 20, verse 16. It says, "And Paul decided to sail past Ephesus so that he would not have to spend time in Asia, for he was hurrying to be in Jerusalem, if at all possible, on the day of Pentecost." So once again, we find that Paul wants to get back into Jerusalem for the day of Pentecost. So they have a gathering there. All of this is happening in the late 50s ACE, or after the current era. Again, the book of Acts does not take us right up to the destruction of Jerusalem. It takes us within about 3 years of the destruction of Jerusalem. We see these various examples. Chapter 21, verse 26. Acts 21, verse 26. "Then Paul took the men, and the next day, having been purified with them, entered the temple to announce the expiration of the days of purification, at which time an offering should be made for each one of them. And then now, when the 7 days were almost ended, the Jews from Asia, seeing him in the temple, stirred up the whole crowd and laid hands on him, crying out, 'Men of Israel, help! This is the man who teaches that all men everywhere against the people, the law, and this place.' And further, he also brought Greeks into the temple and has defiled this holy place." And that's when he brought Timothy, and they were accusing him of bringing in a Greek. Anyway, again, all this happens in Jerusalem on the Temple Mount. Go over to chapter 24. Verse 1, "Now after 5 days, Ananias, the high priest, came down with the elders and a certain orator named Tertullius. And these gave evidence to the governor against Paul." So Paul's accused of blasphemy. Eventually, he's taken to Caesarea, where he's held for 2 years under house arrest. And then from there, he sails to Rome. So chapter 24 and 25 is basically the last time that Paul is in Jerusalem. And this turns out to be just a few years before the destruction of Jerusalem by Tiberius. The Jews begin to revolt. Christians flee. They primarily flee to three locations from Jerusalem before the destruction. Number one is a place called Pella. Pella is across the Jordan River in what is today modern Jordan. Antioch of Syria, which is just straight north, basically, from the land of Judea. And the third place is along the coast, Caesarea, Tyre, and Sidon. They get out of Jerusalem. So basically, Christians have a time period to get out of town. And these are the three places they go, to the what is today called the Judean or the Israeli coast, then north to Syria of Antioch, and to Pella. This is where the Christians fled just prior to the destruction of the temple by the Romans. Sometimes Herod's temple is called the Second Temple. And the destruction took place in 70 ACE, after the current era. siege of Jerusalem in the year 70 AD was a decisive event in the first Jewish war. Interestingly enough, it was the ninth of Ab again. It was destroyed. It was followed by the fall of Masada in 73 AD. We've all heard of Masada. This is all part of the Jewish revolt at the time, and the Romans took them 3 years longer to conquer Masada because they basically had to build a ramp. Remember that? And then by the time they got there, they found that everybody had been killed or killed themselves. It's still disputed. The Roman army, led by the future Emperor Titus, with Tiberius Julius Alexander as his second in command, besieged and conquered the city of Jerusalem, which had been occupied by its Jewish defenders in 66 AD. And the city and its famous Second Temple were destroyed in 70 AD. You'll notice an interesting relief, artist's conception of the Roman destruction of the city. Anybody recognize this relief? It shows Jewish slaves carrying a gold menorah from the destruction of the temple. Aaron, you know where it is? It is. It is. It's in Rome. It lines the Arch of Titus in old Imperial Rome. This is what it looks like today. So if you go to Imperial Rome, this is really one of the few archaeological evidences to support the story of Josephus about the destruction of Jerusalem. And inside the Arch of Titus is this relief of these Jewish slaves bringing the golden menorah from Jerusalem into Rome. Okay, that brings us basically to the end of the New Testament history of Jerusalem and its destruction. I'd like to read just one scripture. We'll probably go back there, but let's go to John. And then I'll open it up for questions and we can talk about anything you'd like to talk about regarding Jerusalem. In John 4, Christ encounters this woman at the well, the Samaritan woman. And in verse 19, of course, she perceives that he's a prophet because he's informed her that she's been married several times before. And who would know that but a prophet? And she said, I perceive you're a prophet. Verse 20, our fathers worshipped on this mountain. And she was at Mount Gerizim in Samaria. And you Jews say that in Jerusalem is the place where one ought to worship. Which was made pretty clear, right? By David and Solomon and what God did to put his stamp of approval on that. And even Ezra and Nehemiah. And Jesus said to her, woman, believe me, the hour is coming when you will neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem worship the Father. So I think Christ was making it very clear. This is a prophetic statement. He was making it very clear that the place is not that important. And to emphasize that, we're going to allow Jerusalem to be destroyed. You worship what you do not know. We know what we worship, for salvation is of the Jews, and it was then. But the hour is coming, and now is, when the true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and truth, for the Father is seeking such to worship him. God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship in spirit and in truth. No longer in a place, a specific place. And I think Christ made that abundantly clear. He talked about the stones not being on top of one another, being tumbled down. He was prophesying the destruction of Jerusalem as he was, you know, looking at it, being given a tour by his disciples. And like I said, that basically brings us to the end of the first century history of Jerusalem. It is rebuilt by the Romans, interestingly enough, and we'll talk about that in our next series. The sermon next time we have a sermon in a Bible study. And it's quite interesting that a temple of Jupiter is put on the location of the temple. And a big statue, a big gold statue of Jupiter And, of course, that was eventually destroyed, and now today we have some Muslim holy places on top of the Temple Mount. It's got a very interesting history that we'll explore a little bit more next time, and then we'll talk specifically about some of the prophecies. Any questions?